Right, it is playing now. Can you believe how many weeks have we gone now without doing an episode of Audacious Aunties? I'm pretty sure it's been two.
Two weeks. Wow.
What can I say? Even Audacious Aunties need a Christmas break.
Too true, man. Like, I really, like, it was just not going to happen. So I'm glad that we're back. Oh, hi, everyone.
Oh, hello! Oh my gosh, yes!
My name's Asia.
And, oh, we're going to do an introduction this time.
Yes, we are, damn it.
And my name's Manvir.
And welcome to Audacious Aunties.
You're leading the episode this time.
I am. I was going to ask.
How does that make you feel?
Actually, quite nervous. Weirdly, since we started this season, every single time I've had to lead the episode, I've been so weirdly nervous. I just think because this season has been far more difficult to tackle. Mm-hmm. Do you get me?
It's been a lot harder to source movement.
And, like, cohesively translate it into words. But that's just the vibe we're going for. Okay. But
don't be anxious. This is fun.
No,
have fun now.
Like, it's fine. It'll be chaotic, just as the Mexican mural movement. Somebody messaged, like, after listening to that one, being like, chaotic energy. Yeah. Am I right? So it'll probably be a similar vibe.
What is Audacious Aunties without chaotic energy?
Exactly. I was gonna ask though. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Oh goodness.
You don't need to do anything intense. Just give us one for the audience.
Okay. So one of my New Year's resolutions is to learn how to make bao buns, because they're so cute.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, you know what that reminds me about?
What?
The fact that for 3 weeks in a row, I tried to order bao buns. And
oh,
each
God.
Time cancelled my order. And then
I can't believe I'm still hearing about this, like,
saga. The fourth time I went to order them, it transpired that the restaurant has closed down.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Wait, so do you know when the restaurant closed down? Like,
no, I don't know. Sometime during the second lockdown, I think. It's closed, like, officially.
I wonder if it closed down, like, before you started trying to order it, but Deliveroo just didn't, like, get the memo on time.
Maybe, but then it's weird because it would accept my order and then 2 minutes before cancel it. So somebody was actively doing that, you know?
That's very snaky behaviour.
Anyway,
the point is, when we next see each other, I will make you bao buns and Shakespeare can finally put an end to this tragedy.
It'll be like closure. Okay, so that's a very admirable New Year's resolution.
Thank you. I thought of it just now.
Inspired by me.
Sure, whatever. What can I say? My life revolves around you, pal. What's your New Year's resolution?
One of my New Year's resolutions is, I've always been very ambitious. Every year, I'm always very ambitious, and I say, this year I'm going to read 25 books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it always fails because the pressure of the number just, and then it's all a mess. And then when you're doing a degree and you're reading so many, like, sources for that, your love for reading is slowly sucked out of you. But next year, my resolution is, I'm going to keep it simple and aim for 5 books, which I will then hopefully exceed and therefore feel better about myself.
I get where you're coming from, in the sense that if you set your expectations really low, then when you pass it, you just feel like you can continue doing what you want to do without the pressure of, like, having to do it. I don't know, this is like some weird psychological like endeavor, but you know it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I wish us both luck.
I think it's very doable. I think you can definitely read 5 books.
Thank you. So, moving on a bit more to the matter of this episode.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes in and we haven't even, like, even tried to mention what the episode is about, you know?
Okay, I'm not about to mention it either. I'm going to take you all on a journey with me instead, basically.
Amazing.
I've generally found, as I was mentioning earlier, this season, like, really interesting and, like, challenging to find movements that sort of fit with the theme.
I like how you gave that a positive spin rather than how you gave it, like, oh my gosh, it gives me so much anxiety to find all of these episodes.
No, it is a positive thing because it's really, like, made me discover lots of new things, which is, like, why we wanted to do this. But particularly this week, I don't know why, I think it must just be, like, bad luck when I was researching. But, so I found a movement, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is like the perfect movement. Oh, it's like everything I hadn't read much about it yet. I'd only read like the initial bit, but like from what I'd read, I was like, okay, this seems good. I'm going to pursue this. And then as I got further and further, literally it transpired that the entire movement was about finding validation from America and like carving itself into America's vision. And I was like, that's ridiculous. That's not what I want to do, because like then we'll just have to talk about America. And the whole point is we're not like
focusing on the West,
not Western world. So wait, what?
No, stop, carry on.
So I was like, okay, I'm gonna put that on the back burner. That can be like an emergency episode for like future in case I need one.
Was it American country?
No, it was
it Indonesia? Japan. Oh, ooh. You know what? I think I was looking at the very same movement as you. Wild. Okay, carry on.
Well, there we are. Anyway, and then, so I moved on from that. And then I found another movement, and I can't even remember what this movement was because I didn't spend that long on it. But essentially, it was all about like the Western world and how the West had influenced and made this movement really great. And I was like, can I not escape the shackles of the Western world? And then I went to a third movement, and this movement was actually really perfect, but it was like the themes and topics for it were quite similar to what we discussed in our last episode. Nice. So I was like, okay, I'll like put that on the back burner for a later episode as well.
You have so many like lined up. You are prepared now for the next few episodes.
Thank you. So anyway, finally getting to the point of this episode, I was like, I've just got to find something. So I started doing some research into Aboriginal art, because we talked about an Aboriginal artist in the last
season.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see if there was like a specific movement that we could like look more into, and I did manage to find a movement, thank you very much everyone. And although there is an element of white man, I'm very quickly going to dismiss the white man at the beginning of this, and we're all just going to move on.
Amazing. So, I'm so excited.
So this movement, the wider movement, is the Aboriginal art movement.
Uh-huh.
But there, more specifically within this movement, we're going to be looking at the Papunya Tula group.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of where this stage of the Aboriginal art movement originated.
Okay.
So first, a bit of background for everyone. So back in Aboriginal culture is like so old. I didn't actually realize how old it was, but it dates back as far as 60,000 to 80,000 years.
Wild.
And so the first Aboriginal art that archaeologists have found, it dates back as far as 20,000 years with visible rock art, which is like super wild.
Do you know what's on the rock art? It's like some swirls.
Not specifically. I know that they use, so it says here that ochres, which I think is a form of like wood or something to do with trees, were used to paint on the rocks, but I don't know what the content of the rock art is.
Oh. That's really cool, either way.
Yeah, so art and that sort of portraying stories and stuff has been a really big part of Aboriginal cultures for a long, long time. And there's no written language for Australian Aboriginal people, and so the way that they conveyed their cultural stories was through artwork for
centuries. Oh my gosh, there's no written language?
No.
Wow.
Like, during the 20th century, when, like, colonization happened, there was like late 20th century they started speaking English and like writing in English and stuff, but like their own culture, they don't have any written language. No.
But there is well, there's obviously a spoken language.
Yes.
And did they like try to transcribe that through like Latin script or something then when the colonizers came?
I'm not sure. I don't think they did. I think that the colonizers kind of did their own thing and they carried on doing their artwork and symbols and stuff.
They were just like, learn English, we can't be bothered to learn your language.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course. But I guess the symbols and iconography were almost a language in themselves, like hieroglyphics vibes, mm-hmm. is what I get. But it was very much about like storytelling and cultural vibes from artwork. So, yeah, so basically, for a long time they used like body paint, drawing in dirt and sand when they used to sing and write stories and whatnot. And then what happened is in 1971, there was a school teacher named Jeffrey Bardon, and this guy was in Papunya. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. Papunya, P-A-P-U-N-Y-A. Mm-hmm. And he was teaching Aboriginal children there, and he noticed Aboriginal men telling stories and drawing symbols in the sand, and so he encouraged the children to like paint the stories that they were telling onto canvases and boards. And then when the men saw the children doing that, they then started to paint on canvases and canvases, is that a word?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're
why
doing that. Great, sweetie.
Thank you. Anyway, yeah, so they
It's like fishes. No, it isn't, because you can say fish. I don't know, I'm sorry.
Fish does not have a plural.
Well, it does. You can say fishes, even though it is fish, but like fishes is now accepted by the Queen.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. Wow, I never thought about that.
But it's not the same, so we don't need to carry on with this conversation.
Sorry, yes, you're right. Anyway, so they would paint their stories on canvases and boards. And this was like a really big jump for Indigenous people from just doing their own form of artwork to painting on canvases and boards and distributing it and to Western audiences and Western eyes.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of how Aboriginal art as a movement really started to pick up, and they started to get exhibitions and everything like that.
That's really cool. But,
so,
is Jeffrey the white guy who you're skimming over?
Yeah. Okay. Jeffrey, like, is dying or whatever, but then, like, the Aboriginal people are the ones who owned it and made it what it was.
That's true. We need white allies.
We need Ali right now.
We need white allies, not white saviours. What can I say?
Too true, man. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Such a, like, fine line.
There is.
Such a fine line.
I think Jeffrey can be deemed as an ally in this context, but you know, we need to look into him a bit more.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of him, carry on.
So, what's interesting about Aboriginal culture is that there were lots of tribes and family groups and sects of the community, and they had to, how do I explain this? They was quite simple to explain, I'm just like, my mind is...
That's okay.
They needed to have permission to pass down the stories, and they would be passed down to these specific groups that they were in as sort of like their heritage and their cultural stories within their tribes and families to like set them apart.
Oh, like family secret recipes, but stories.
Yeah, essentially. So like even within the Aboriginal community, there'd be some stories that other parts of the community would never fully understand or know.
That's really cool.
Let alone outside of the Aboriginal community.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like the sanctity of the stories and the significance they had to the identity of Aboriginal people meant that when people started painting on canvases and boards, it was quite controversial within the community, because you're essentially like showing these stories to an audience outside of the Aboriginal community and your own communities. So just talking a bit more about the painting style, basically the Papunya Tula painting style derives directly from the artist's knowledge of traditional body and sand painting associated with ceremony. And they would portray Dreamtime creation stories for the public. And basically, Dreamtime is the translation of the creation of time for Aboriginal people. So the idea of creation and time was like a really big aspect of stories and folklore within Aboriginal communities. So that was like the style and the themes that they would portray.
That's really cool. So when you say Dreamtime and creation of time, is it a bit in like the sense... in that dreams are when time is kind of like off on its own whims?
So,
like, is it something to do with the subconscious kind of like dreaming, or is it more to do with time as a concept?
I think it's more to do with time as a concept, okay. And like how creation came to be.
Oh, okay.
That kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like carving out all of these paintings and everything to cater to a white conservative audience, and very often they didn't sell their paintings for a lot of money initially.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a difficult time, and there was, as I was saying, serious resistance and sometimes rejection from other Aboriginal communities who regarded like paintings of sensitive matters inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is, so basically because of this resistance, they started to adapt the art movement where in their paintings they would start to use a dotted pattern, and the dots would cover up aspects of the painting and story so that only the people who had made the painting or knew the story would know the full painting and the full story behind it. And so to this day, there are the majority of Aboriginal paintings will never know the full story behind them because they're like hidden behind the dots.
Wow. So they would paint something and then put dots on top, or was there nothing below the dots?
I think, or what, to my understanding, it started as there was like a combination of both.
Oh, okay.
Like some they would paint maybe slightly abstractly and then dot on top, or some they would just use dots to represent what they were trying to paint.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So we are going to look at two paintings.
Yay!
Woo! So the first painting we're going to look at, if you type in Water Dreaming at Calipinia.
At Calipinia.
1972. So if you click the first link I sent you.
Uh-huh. Okay, clicked. Oh, that's really cool.
This is a really good example of the dotted pattern. So this was painted in 1972 after the severe backlash of just painting normal paintings.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the dotted... this is one of the first big dotted paintings. And so the artist, whose name is Warangkula, used elaborate veilings to sort of portray a mesmerizing beauty that relates to the symbolic theme of raindrops bringing forth the vegetation stirrings below the earth.
Oh, I see. So is this a bit like a bird's eye view of different fields?
I think so, yeah.
Interesting, because I don't know, like, I also thought it was a bird's eye view, but I also thought that it was like ships in water.
Oh, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, because you get some like longer different like bits, ovals in there that look like ships. But no, I kind of see where he's coming now with the paddies. And also like the dots could almost be representative of rain drops too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It's really nice. I also really like how it, obviously there's like so much going on, but it all leads up to the little like hole in the middle.
It's very centered.
Yeah, it's very nice. I really like how it kind of draws the eyes in through all of these lines. And I also really like the birds in the corner as well. I wonder what they're symbolizing. They are birds, right?
Maybe.
Cool.
I guess we'll never know the true story, will we?
No. Is there anything online which can tell us what it means? I mean, I guess not. I guess that's the whole point of this art, so that we don't know.
Yeah, I think that there might be... the main information I found from it was just the basic meaning of the raindrops and the vegetation stirrings.
That's really cool. I really like that.
Pretty.
Yeah.
and then the next piece. So basically, what happened is that the art movement itself like developed over 4 decades. Like, and
oh, this one's so different. Sorry, I just clicked on the link.
That's okay. I'm about to explain the context around the link in a second. So basically, originally it was like a very male dominated practice, but in sort of like the 90s and late 80s they started to allow well, allow, women were doing it anyway, but like women started to be more recognized for their work. Mm-hmm. And one of, in 2007, the first indigenous art piece, one of the first indigenous art pieces sold for more than a, no, there were lots of, how do I phrase this? There were lots of indigenous art pieces that had already been sold, but it was one of the first to be sold for more than $1 million.
Wow.
And this was by Emily Kame Kungware, and it's called Earth's Creation. And yeah, so it sold for a record price, not only for, both for an Australian woman artist and for an Australian Aboriginal artist.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. God, it's so intense, the pieces, just like all of the colours, they hit you all at once. So it's called Earth's Creation. So is there a, do we know about a creation story then in Aboriginal culture that we could potentially try to draw it to?
So the creation lawn, also known as Dreamtime, sort of dates back 65,000 years.
Wow.
And it sort of shows, tells the stories of events that have happened and how the universe came to be, how, and how their creator intended for humans to like function within the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, from what I can read. Okay, so let me read what this website says. The Australian Aborigines believe that the land they occupied was once not in existence like it is today. It was free from any kind of form or life. It was vacuous and empty. And they unquestionably believed that this was the way things once were because the ancestors had said so, and so they never doubted it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during what has become known as the dream time that the land, mountains, hills, rivers, plants, life forms, animals, humans, and even the sky above were formed by the actions of a mysterious and supernatural spirit.
Oh, I see.
And it was during the dream time as well that they declared the laws and the land and how people should behave with one another and their customs and rituals and ceremonies. And that's how it's like in dreamland that all of the customs and rituals of Aboriginal culture originated.
That's really cool.
So yeah,
that's really interesting, because I was just also reading like further down in the link that you sent me how it's a really big piece, and the way that she made it was that she not only just used paintbrushes, but she'd use her hands and body all over the canvas, and because it was so huge, she sometimes had to like even just like lie on it as well to paint. So it's almost kind of like symbolic of what you were saying about, like, you know, being created by, what was he saying, like the hand of God or whatever, and maybe this is like a microcosmic symbolic version of that.
Mm-hmm. It seems that a lot of, like, so much of the paint, many of the paintings have sort of their roots in vegetation and land and soil, and that seems to be like the underlying, or water, like all of these paintings have a very nature focused vibe to them.
I really like that, because I think that a lot of the paintings that we often look at are to do much more with love, or, you know, just like painting people's faces. And I think that with, especially with abstract art, where like it's not as easy to understand what's happening in the painting, it's I don't know, it's very hard to try and create a kind of personal understanding with it, or just even understand it at all, whereas yeah, this is like you can tell quite quickly kind of the style of it and what it's trying to represent, whilst still kind of not being completely sure about the story behind it, which I like.
Yeah, I agree. I think the reason, the sort of, to bring it round back to the idea of like a social movement, I very much feel what I loved the most about this was the idea that it had hidden stories, and that they were like, we don't want the white men to know what we're doing, so we're just gonna like make, like, show them our culture and sort of show how gorgeous and beautiful it is, whilst at the same time keeping it as our own and knowing that we can't trust white people.
It's just, it's kind of like you can just see all the white people watching it and then thinking, oh my gosh, you're teasing me, nutty nutty, you're teasing me.
Exactly. So like, you know, they managed to makes such a profound mark in the art world, not only in Australia but globally, whilst also like preserving the sanctity of their culture.
Yeah.
And sort of using that as a means to, you know, be taken seriously as a group within Australia and their rights heard.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's beautiful.
That is really nice. And it's also a nice way of also still like kind of making sure that people within the community who aren't technically doing the art are still comfortable with it. Oh, well, thank you for that, pal. I really liked this week. It was really good.
Yeah, I thought it was quite wholesome.
Yeah, congratulations. Aww. Well, it's me next week. And there will be a next week. I promise.
Yes.
I know. And what we'll be discussing, only God knows till then.
Exactly. Only time will tell.
Exactly. Anyway, this has been Audacious Aunties. I feel like if we have an opening theme, we should have a closing theme as well.
We do.
Oh my gosh, we used to do jingles, Asya.
Oh my goodness.
It's too late now.
It's too late to apologize. Whoa,
Dying.
What a time to... Do you want to bring it back?
I mean, yeah, why not?
And
do you want to do a jingle this time, or...
Oh my god, yeah, okay, sure.
Okay, give us a jingle. Oh, that was lovely. Right, wow.
We just had an article come out.
Yes, we did. Let's shout that out. So Kirsty Thompson for the Eddie magazine wrote a brilliant article interviewing us two about what our plans were for season 3. And just kind of like talking about what we thought about art and culture and the West as a whole and why Audacious Aunties just exists. It was a really nice way of reflecting back on ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. So if you want to read that, it's up on the Eddie magazine website.
Yep. Or you can find it in the link in our bio on Instagram, which I will do right away so that it's there when this episode airs.
Beautiful.
And yeah, till then, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
This audio was brought to you by Manveer Dobb and Asya Iftikhar.
We don't know much, to say the least.
But if you would like to share your thoughts, knowledge, criticisms, fan mail,
then pop us an email at audaciousaunties@gmail.com.